You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the mindset and the success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. I'm super excited to dive into the mind of my next guest. His name is Chris Voss. He's a CEO, author, and negotiation expert. Chris, he's the CEO of Black Swan Group, and he's authored the national bestseller, Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as Your Life Depended on It, which was named one of the 7 best books on negotiation. And how he's been able to do this, he's a 24-year veteran of the FBI. He's retired now, but he was the lead international kidnapping negotiator. Man, high-level cool stuff. And drawing on his experience in high-stakes negotiations, his company specializes in solving business communications problems using hostage negotiation solutions. Their negotiation methodology focuses on discovering the black swans, small pieces of information that have a huge effect on the actual outcome. Chris and his team have helped many companies secure and close better deals, save money, and solve internal communication problems. Chris has been featured in Time, Business Insider, Entrepreneur, Inc., Fast Company, Fortune, The Washington Post, Success Magazine, Squawk Box, CNN, ABC News, and many more. So I'm super excited today and honored to be able to have Chris Voss on Making Bank. Welcome to the show.
Josh, thanks very much. And you know the most important place that I've been featured? My book is on my mom's coffee table. You have to look at that when you come in her house.
That's awesome. And you're right. That is the best place. That means you made it.
Yeah.
Well, so I always ask everybody, like, how did you get started as an entrepreneur? But what I want to find out is, I guess, what got you started first off, you know, and into the FBI career path?
Yeah, you know, it was all a series of left turns, different stuff that fell out of the sky. You know, as a teenager, I decided I wanted to be in law enforcement, wanted to be a cop. Thought it was going to be exciting, interesting, creative, and do some good at the same time. And so I got into law enforcement, and my father encouraged me to go into federal law enforcement because he just paid for a college degree, and I went out and got a job that didn't need a college degree. You know, so he's seen his investment go down the tubes. He wanted a little bit more from his investment in my degree besides 4 years of partying and, you know, skirting, going, getting into trouble and all that sort of stuff. So got into federal law enforcement. Originally, the FBI, I was originally looked at the Secret Service. They weren't hiring. You know, the universe sets up obstacles in your way on purpose. So got into the FBI. They were big hiring push. Became a member of the SWAT team with the FBI. Re-aggravated an old knee injury, then decided, instead of completely destroying my knee, to look at something else in crisis response. We had hostage negotiators. I didn't figure it could be that hard. You know, you talk to people. You know, it's like you. I mean, you're a great host. People say, since you make it look easy, people think it is easy. You know, and it's not. Hostage negotiation was that. You talk about a deep dive. Man, that was cool. That's human behavior. That's emotional intelligence. And I got into that, and it was awesome. And the other big advantage of being a hostage negotiator versus being on a SWAT team, you know, the SWAT team, you know, they sit around on the perimeter while the hostage negotiators do their thing. So, you know, I got to negotiate a heck of a lot more people out than I would have got a chance to shoot at than if I was on a SWAT team. And that was cool. I mean, that was some crazy stuff. Had some exceptional things happen there. You know, a partner of mine and I, we just a real low-key siege, barricaded guy in Dobbs Ferry, New York. And when we got him out, the negotiators looked at his father was standing outside. And the commander says, you know, these guys just saved your son's life. So, you know, there were good moments in that, too. And then, you know, got into business negotiation of all things. Because it's the same thing. It's human behavior. Same stuff, man. And now my business, we are killing it. We're helping people work absolute magic in their deals. It's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. And I mean, I guess over the 24 years, part of that time being the hostage negotiator and everything else, I mean, you really, really learn, what moves people, what makes them make those decisions, that they're doing, and based on what you're saying as well, that can either change or and what impact that has on the whole conversation, I would suspect.
Yeah, it's helping them see what's in their head, for lack of a better term, and then getting them to make a different comparison. I mean, it sounds really stupid, but we're making comparisons in our head all the time, and most of the stuff that we're comparing in our head, the vast majority of it is imagined. The saying that I always hated, perception is reality, is true. But what a hostage negotiator's got is a number of skills. First of all, to find out what that perception is, and secondly, to change it. We know how to get in there. And the funny thing about hostage negotiation in terms of human behavior is we discovered all this stuff back in the 70s and the 80s that worked. And psychologists didn't really understand it and they couldn't explain it. So, we used to always argue with psychologists. But neuroscience backs it all up now completely. I mean, I don't even refer to psychology. I refer to neuroscience because now it's advanced to the point where we can watch what's going on in somebody's brain. We can track the chemical changes. We can track the brain activity. And hostage negotiation is the application of neuroscience. I'm a neuroscientist.
That's right. No more hostage negotiator. Well, cool. So what were like some of the top things that you took away from being in the FBI as a hostage negotiator that you now are applying towards business negotiations? Obviously, there's similar parallels and everything, but I guess what were some of those top things that you're helping and working with people on?
Well, the first thing, in a hostage negotiation, we were taught to look for the loss. Like if a guy's waving a gun around someplace or if he's threatening violence, there's going to be a loss in the last 24 to 48 hours. It's triggered that behavior. And, the tools that we were given were designed in a very specific way, even more specific than we knew. But it was like, look for the loss. Get him to talk about the loss. Now, this is, again, back in the 1970s, 1980s. Now, come along around 2002-ish, Daniel Kahneman gets the Nobel Prize in Behavioral Economics for prospect theory, saying that all human behavior is motivated more by loss than anything else. The biggest impact on our thinking is our perception of loss or prospect of loss, which is why they called it prospect theory. And Kahneman and his partner, Amos Tversky, said this is not the only driver of human behavior. It's just the biggest, outsized. The prospect theory says double the impact, the perception of loss. In person, Daniel Kahneman will say 5 to 7 times the impact. It's an insane difference. You talk about balancing the scales in a ridiculous way. So, holy cow, Kahneman is saying it's all human behavior, not just hostage taking. And we stumble over this and, like, I got a set of tools that's completely designed to find the loss and to change the perspective on that loss. And that's what is one of the biggest things. I mean, after we learned how to do all this stuff, we just thought it was hostage taking. Professor Kahneman says it's everything. I'm like, all right, I'm loaded up on this. I learned how to do this stuff a long time ago. And that's one of the biggest things.
Cool. So tell me, I guess, then what are some of those steps then to really start to dig in and uncover what that is? Because I could see how obviously, if you're in a business and you're negotiating, whatever it may be, or just even any communication, and the other party's like, man, okay, well, if I am trying to sell my business, but then I'm losing out on this and this. So I guess, what are those steps that you go through to uncover what that is?
Well, a lot of innocent observations, if you will, innocent in quote marks, because I'm trying to bypass your defense mechanisms, primarily your prefrontal cortex, which some people refer to as the CEO of the brain. What it really is a traffic cop of the brain in front. I'm going to go past that. I'm going to get right into your emotional reaction. I'm going to do it in innocent ways. Like I'm going to say, wow, you know, is something as stupid as it sounds like this is important to you. And you're going to go, yeah, you know, and here's why it's important. It's going to trigger a response that, you know, one of our clients refers to as opening the floodgates of truth telling. Now, what we found is if I ask you a question, you're going to kind of give me an answer. I'm going to say, you know, what about this is important to you? Which is actually as good of a design question as you could get. We refer to that as a calibrated question. And your best calibrated questions are asked with what or how, because they're deferential. You know, you love to tell me what to do. You love to tell me what, because it makes you feel strong and powerful and in control. But it's also, it triggers a prefrontal. Now, listen to my verbiage. I sound like Ace Ventura here, I realize. It does, a question always triggers a defense mechanism. And here's the stupid part. It's based on the way the words are designed, not the inflection. Because if I say, what about this is important to you? Versus, sounds like this is important to you? Now, both are hit you with a questioning tone of voice. But the second one is going to get a more honest answer, a more unvarnished answer. Even though my tone of voice said question, the words didn't. Because when I say, sounds like this is important to you, it immediately puts you in what we call contemplation mode. And internally, you say to yourself, hey, is this important? Yeah, but here's why. And it's a great way to get at the why without asking why, which why triggers a whole bunch of other involuntary problems, which we completely bypass. So I'm really using something that we've had both a business client said opens the floodgates of truth telling to, interestingly enough, the same approach in law enforcement has been referred to as the closest thing that law enforcement has to a truth serum. Because they, you know, I like the Elon Musk approach. Elon Musk used to always read two completely different books looking for universal principles. And if it was one book and another book and they were polar opposites, then he could take that away as a universal principle. If both law enforcement interrogation of terrorists calls this a truth serum, and we got business clients saying this unlocks the floodgates of truth telling, because in a negotiation, you know, you need the truth. You can't handle the truth. You need the truth.
Right, yeah.
Two completely different areas, and like, all right, we're on to something here with this.
Cool. So asking the initial questions in a specific manner, then to find out what really is important or why that is important.
Yeah, and we're gonna jump back and forth, and I'm gonna get you talking. You know, you said before, you know, your kids want to know, how does a hostage negotiate? How does an FBI agent get somebody talking?
Right.
I'm gonna get you talking. And pretty soon, you know, you've been talking for 45 minutes and you'll be like, wow, where'd the time go? What did I say? I never talked this much before. I get the biggest kick out of people telling me after I've talked to them for 20 to 30 minutes and have them say, I never told anybody that before. I didn't even realize I was thinking that, you know, I do that all the time. Our clients, the people that I work, that work with me on my team, we get people talking all the time. We're kind of used to it.
Being your business, yes, for sure. Okay, so then kind of like, what does that next process look like? So you got them talking, you know, diving into really understanding what that loss is or what that the perceived loss is.
Yeah, and then I'm also listening for your drivers. Like, I'm going to get you talking about something that's personal to you, because that's going to tell me what kind of deals you're going to make and what you're going to follow through on. It's also going to start to get me a look at, for lack of a better term, you know, what your core values are. and whether or not our core values line up, whether or not there's a fit. Because I'm looking for long-term business partners. I'm looking for somebody who's going to make a lot of money with me for a long time that I could trust. Now, if I get you talking and we get a business partner, a woman who loves to tell the story of the man she married. She met him when he was her best friend's boyfriend. And I remember thinking like, all right, I'm glad I heard that story.
Yeah.
Because you just told me I need to worry about trusting you. And now that gives me long-term, I know what to look out for. We got a core value problem here. Now, do we do business with this person? Yes, we do. Do we drop our guard? No, we do not. And when we find out that they slipped something past us with another business partner, do we become outraged? Like, no, this is just one more thing that's going to lead to the termination of our relationship, and we're going to do it with a clear conscience. So I want to know about you as a human being. You know, I'm convinced it's why business people love to play golf. Because you get out on a golf course for 6-8 hours, you know, you play a round of golf with somebody, people start getting tired. You see the guy when his putt is 4 feet from the hole. He says, "That's a gimme," and he picks it up. Because you want to know, or he hit the ball into the rough, he or she. And when they're not looking, they kick it back out onto the fairway. You're looking for predictability with someone. You're looking for, what are they going to do when nobody's looking? You're going to spend 6-8 hours to try to get a feel for what their core values are, how you could trust them. I got news for you. My hostage negotiation techniques, I can get that out of somebody in 20 minutes to a half an hour. I don't need to go out on a golf course for 8 hours to pick that up. If time is money, and it is, we make our use of time more effective.
Makes sense.
That's,
yeah,
how we make people more profitable long term.
Awesome. And so what then is kind of that next phase, or, you know, what's that next step that you guys move into during a negotiation?
Well, now that we got a better snapshot of the other person's core values, you know, is there a deal here? Will they brainstorm with us? There's always a better deal to be had, always. You know, I could go through a long explanation why that's true, but there's always a better deal. So how hard is it going to be to get to, and can I trust you to implement? You know, if somebody calls me and we got this conversation with a potential client the other day, you know, we need to know people in negotiation. How can we make sure that they follow through? You know, how do we make sure they make their commitments? And my answer to them was, you got a much bigger problem than you realize. Because if you're having trouble getting people to follow through, and that question tells me you're really trying to constrain people in your negotiations, and that makes people nervous. So, you know, we got to start over with you. It's the same as the CEO says, how do I put penalty clauses in my contract? I'm like, your problem is not penalty clauses. Your problem is your negotiation process to begin with. If you think you need penalty clauses, you got real trust issues, you got bad deals, you got implementation problems, and it's killing you. You know, you think you got a cold and you got pneumonia. You know, you have diagnosed this disease completely improperly. So after we get a diagnosis, do we trust somebody? And then do we want to make a deal? Do we want to brainstorm? Most likely we want to make a deal. I hate not making deals. And I will make deals with people that we got some core value issues with. I just don't kid myself about who we're talking to. And let's construct a deal and let's move forward.
Gotcha. But, you know, based on the communication that you've had with them, what you need to watch out for, keep an eye out for, even though, you know, okay, cool, this deal makes sense because it'll generate X and do this and this and this, but may lead to this person taking advantage of this situation or whatever.
Right, right. And I'll tell you what, and since we're talking about it, the biggest problem is, am I the fool in the game? You know, I know there's a saying among salespeople that there's nothing wrong with not getting the deal. or not making the sale. What's wrong is taking a long time to not make the sale. So our biggest thing here is, are we being played as the fool in the game? Are we just there to drive the price down on somebody else? That happens a lot. And we're going to figure that out real early. Lufthansa tried to get us to submit a proposal for negotiation training about a year ago. And they were adamant that we compete. Now, I don't know anybody at Lufthansa, but I don't know anybody in their hierarchy. That tells me they got a favorite, and they want our bid to drive the other side's bid down. You know, they don't approach, Lufthansa does not do cold calling. And they're not new to the training game. They got a training vendor they've been using for a long time. And I refuse, you know, I sent them an email back saying, we don't do business that way. I'm not interested in the business. Now, and Lufthansa is also used to, their, you know, such as big, you know, they're the sexy client. And they know that people are going to knock themselves out pursuing them. And even if they want you, they're going to drive their price, your price down. Hence what they were trying to use me with on another vendor. I don't need that kind of client either. You know, we don't need the big, sexy client that wants to, thinks that us merely being in the room with them is compensation. You know, I got major league professional teams approaching me saying, hey, you know, the Yankees give me a call. Hey, come and give training to the Yankees. We'll let you sit in one of our skyboxes at one of the games. No.
You're like, I don't need to.
Pay like everybody else. Number one, I don't live in New York anymore. I'm a Yankee fan. It's going to cost me a lot of money to go sit in one of those boxes, and I can't use that to pay my mortgage. But there are a lot of big, sexy clients out there that think, you know, just merely doing business with them is you're going to get such a charge out of it. That on top of that, you know, they lure you in like, don't you want the Yankees for a client? Don't you want Lufthansa for a client? They're probably also going to make you sign a non-disclosure, which means you can't.
So you can anyways.
Yeah, so what am I doing this stuff?
Right.
Yeah? So, yeah, well, you know, we all that factors into our thinking.
Awesome. Tell me a little bit about Never Split the Difference. So you're negotiating, you guys are close, and, you know, on the deal, but then it's like, okay, we don't want to split the difference. So kind of give me a little bit of background and insight in the book, because I thought I had a copy, and I looked all over for it, and I'm like, man, how do I not have a copy? I know, I see it right there.
You know what? I got in Spanish. I got over here, we got over there in German. We got up here in Chinese. We're taking over the world. I'll rule the world. I feel like who's a bad guy in Austin Powers, a ball guy? You know, what was his? Dr. Evil.
Oh, Dr. Evil, yeah.
$1 million. I forgot your question.
So I'm asking, never split the difference. So you're close in a negotiation, but you're saying, okay, we don't want to split the difference. Or we do.
All right, so never split the difference. Absolutely bad idea. Bad idea. Now, first of all, there's a pretty good chance, like, the other guy might have a better idea than you. Like, am I going to turn down their solution because I didn't think of it? That's stupid. But tons of people will do that. So I got to be open to maybe you got a better idea than me. And then chances are, okay, so if we can't close this, there's something we haven't talked about. We missed something. And if we miss something, that's going to manifest itself in our implementation in roughly a 7-to-1 rate of return, and that's 7 times the amount of damage, or, you know, the old phrase, a stitch in time saves 9. You know, this is about, if we can't close this, there's something we've missed, there's something we don't know, and it's going to hurt us at 7-to-9 times the impact of loss. Once we try to implement this, and stitching time saves 9, let's figure out what it is. Let's fix it before we dive in heavily. Because, you know, either there's something we've missed, or if we're trying to water down the ideas. I mean, everything about compromise, everything about splitting the difference is so damaging. You know, I don't know your idea. I don't know my idea. Let's blend them and come up with a half-assed idea. You know, I get an example of compromise. You know, let's take part of your that idea and my idea. We teach people to send out an email that says, "Have you given up on this project?" to a non-responder. Somebody that's not getting back to us, somebody who refuses to return our phone calls, emails, text messages. "Have you given up on doing business with the Black Swan Group?" Word for word. And we guarantee people you're going to get a response anywhere from 3 to 9 minutes to the person seeing it. Word for word. So I'm at a conference the other day, and this woman comes up to me and she says, "You know, I tried your no-oriented, have you given up, and it didn't work. I didn't get a response." "All right. That's possible. You sent the text?" "Yeah, I sent the text." She says, "Here, I'll show it to you right now." Now, she changed the wording. She thought, "Well, you know, what you said was a little too assertive, and I didn't want to say, 'Have you given up?' And so I sent she sent a text that said, 'Should we give up on having lunch to discuss the project?'" And got dead silence.
That's totally different.
It's totally different. Word for word, she liked "we" instead of "you." And she didn't want to be so assertive on the project. And she was trying to get him to have lunch. And so this was a compromise. This was splitting the difference. This was blending some of her idea with some of my idea. And it utterly failed. Like, if you're going to follow my advice or my company's advice, you know, my colleague's advice, you follow it word for word. And then we'll take responsibility for the outcome. But as soon as you start blending in your ideas and screwing it up and diluting the medicine or whatever it is, it ain't going to work. And in compromise or splitting the difference after splitting, that's what always happens if it's genuine. Now, the flip side is, what if it's not genuine? You know, there's an old saying, the person who's offering to meet you in the middle is usually a poor judge of distance.
Cool. So we only got a few minutes left. It went quick. I looked over. I'm like, what?
Shut up.
I know.
We got to tell people about the newsletter before we get done, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll wrap up with where can they find you? What do you have? You know, all the good stuff. So, what two or three ideas do you want to share that can help people transform their negotiation strategies?
All right, real simple thing. Start paraphrasing what the other side has said before you respond. You know, this is kind of the Stephen Covey, seek first to understand, then be understood. Just try and paraphrase. Don't agree. Don't disagree. Just paraphrase back to what people say. I mean, there's no commitment on your part. You're going to be shocked as a behavior, a difference that makes. And part of that is letting them go first. I mean, have the courage to let them go first. You know, let's implement a little bit of this Covey advice. Let's actually implement it. See what happens. You know, and then it just be gentler. Don't be any less. Don't hide what you want to say. I reflect back as what would I tell the 28-year-old Chris Voss? I'd say say the same things. Just be a little bit nicer about it, and just see what happens. Don't change who you are. Just put a little softer edge on it.
Cool. All right. So tell us. No, I like that because I think obviously sometimes we go into a situation where like, okay, I'm gonna get this and this and, you know, and, you know, they're not responding the right way. So we, like you said, we put up that defensive and everything. And so then we respond possibly more harshly or more from a critical standpoint than if we took a step back and said, okay, cool. Let me hear what they're saying, paraphrase back what they're saying to make sure everybody's clear and then move forward in the negotiation.
Yeah. Yeah, see what happens. I guarantee you're gonna save massive amounts of time in in the entire negotiation process. You're going to get off the gerbil wheel of communication.
The gerbil wheel. So tell us, where can people find out more about what you guys do and anything that you might have for them?
All right, subscribe to our newsletter. It's complimentary. It's free. It's a good price. If it's free, I'll take three, right? A real easy way to subscribe, send FBI Empathy. Send a text that says FBI Empathy, all one word. Don't let your autocorrect make it the two words. One word, FBI Empathy. Send that text message to the number 22828. It's 22828. FBI Empathy, all one word. That is a gateway to everything we have. We got a lot of free content. The newsletter's got tons of articles that are free. When it comes to your email, it comes in once a week, Tuesday mornings. It's short and sweet. You know, I get some newsletters from people that there's so many choices. By the time I make up my mind what I want to read, I got to take a nap. I mean, it's just a lot of work to wade through the choices. We don't do that to you. We're going to give you one thing, one simple, short article to read, tune your brain up, move out, take off. It's a great way to keep your skills sharp. So subscribe to The Edge, and it's a gateway to everything that we do.
Awesome. And book is on Amazon, bookstores, all the great places.
And I tell you what, I buy copies of my book on Amazon. It's always got the best price. I mean, I buy them 20 at a time. Buy it on Amazon. It's a great price.
Awesome. Just, I guess, one last idea. You're like, man, I really wish I would have said this earlier. What's one last thought or idea you want to leave our audience with?
You know, give negotiation a chance. Negotiation is not a horrible thing if you give it a chance. Not a horrible thing.
Awesome. Yeah, because I think some people get, oh, man, I got to negotiate. So they get all nervous and just in their head, and they start perceiving things that are not really there. So, but yeah, no, definitely give it a chance, and I think that's awesome. No, it was an honor to have you on the show. Really starting to understand the insights, some of the creative tactics and thoughts and ideas that you guys and you've utilized over the years, whether it's in hostage negotiation, whether it's in business negotiation. And, you know, it's awesome to be able to hear and understand some of that, I guess, behind the scenes things that happen. And so, guys, I hope you guys were taking notes. Make sure you grab Never Split the Difference, because it's going to help you in business. It's going to help you in your life, whether any types of negotiations, just even be able to understand the other person better. So grab his book. And Chris, it was an honor to have you on Making Bank today, and really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. An absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.